Hello and welcome to Transmission. Today, I'm speaking with Mikey Clark, CEO of Reload Energy, who was previously the CTO at Pivot Power and successfully built a 2-gigawatt battery network that was acquired by EDF Renewables. We discussed the massive infrastructure challenge facing industries transitioning from diesel to electricity, Reload's innovative power parks for providing gigawatt scale access, and why the shortage of skilled engineers is a critical bottleneck for the energy transition. What really struck me was his observation that while haulage companies excel at managing diesel fleets, managing large electrical connections is a radically new thing. However, their decisions are based in the hard economics of operating businesses. So when fleet operations reach the tipping point to go electric, these companies will move fast. So, can power parks really enable the wider electrification? Or will regulatory hurdles and skill shortages derail these innovative approaches? Let's jump in. Hello, Mikey, and welcome to Transmission.
Thank you. Awesome to be here.
And let's start, as ever, with you and what is your role in the energy industry?
Okay, so at the moment, I'm the CEO of Reload Energy, but I've always been an engineer. So I started reading metallurgy and materials engineering, so I love the fundamentals. Spent a lot of time building hospitals and schools and data centers, but moved across into power when the Olympics got announced in 2006, and I've been in power ever since, be it building tunnels, leading R&D for distribution networks, being in startups, or more recently, co-founding Pivot Power, and really focusing on batteries at grid scale, particularly on the transmission network.
Okay. And people will know a little bit of that Pivot Power history. So could you give us the very quick history of Pivot Power?
Yeah. So I love how we did it. I wouldn't change a thing. But ultimately, we were sharing an office with some of the guys from Tesla at the time trying to build a network. And they were struggling with DNOs. They couldn't get their heads around securities and credit ratings that you needed to play on the transmission network. And they came to us and said, like, you guys should have a look at this. And there was kind of a light bulb moment in end of 2017. Mm-hmm. And we got talking to National Grid and, yeah, we'd raised money within a few weeks. We'd built a 2-gigawatt network within 18 months and sold it to EDF Renewables. And we've been building it ever since until Reload arrived.
And that was somewhat unique because you were looking at tertiary windings on some of the largest transformers, right? And,
that's right.
Yeah. And like, just for people outside of the energy space, what does that even mean?
So a tertiary winding is if you think of an auto transformer, for those that don't know, an auto transformer is just a huge transformer, a super good transformer on the transmission network. They're continuously wound, which means they sometimes struggle with harmonics. And so there's a nice little winding that goes on the side of that transformer that's wound in a delta configuration, which is wonderfully available to us to take off three phases and connect a battery. So that was really the genesis of that.
Okay, and this is the earliest we've ever gone into that level of technical detail.
So,
which is going to be fantastic because I know loads of people who listen to this are super interested in both the energy, battery, and the engineering space. So I think this episode is going to have a whole load of content for them.
Well, tell me when I go too deep.
Yes.
I can talk all day about it.
I will. Let's go on from Pivot then to Reload. So what is Reload?
So Reload was a group of us, some of us from Pivot Power, and we've brought in a COO who I've worked with before. Ultimately, we're a team of people that really believe in our journey to net zero, but we're seeing a massive gap on the load and demand side. We've been part of the process of building batteries and solar and wind, and there's lots of capacity and lots of people doing that. I think we felt like there was a whole other side of the equation missing, and that's what we focused on. So we don't describe ourselves as a startup. We're a special purpose company designed specifically to take advantage of the process that's happening in connections reform. We're very pro that. We think it needs to happen. But we also think load really needs to come to the forefront because ultimately it's these new customers that are switching in some cases from diesel or hydrocarbons into electricity over the next 10 years. We really want to be there as a huge catalyst for them.
So you're targeting people who are based on sort of conventional methods of energy into power generation on site, and you're trying to do that in a different way. So for people kind of less familiar with the work that you're doing, how do you do that for them?
Fine. So I'll talk about the concept of our power parks a little bit later, but ultimately there's customers like the haulage industry. So road haulage is exclusively, almost exclusively diesel at the moment. They're amazing at buying diesel and they understand how that whole network of new fleet trucks, secondhand fleet trucks go, and they understand their residual values. When it comes to electrifying those, and we're not miles away, we're not many years away from a volume getting onto the roads. Buying electricity is a radically new thing, particularly as it's a lot more complex than diesel. Connecting into large volumes of power, often they don't own their own sites. Often DNOs aren't incredibly helpful when it comes to giving them a timely and affordable connection. So we're really talking to the haulage industry about maybe an alternative and looking at our power parks. Same thing with the shipping industry, probably a slower burn, but ships run almost exclusively on heavy fuel oil, which is like a thicker diesel. They tend to switch to a low sulfur solution in once they're in inland waters. But again, they're going to need in the fullness of time to switch to an alternative. We don't know what that is, whether it's e-methanol or a hydrogen derivative, ammonia, etc. All those are going to be manufactured using electricity. So as the move goes from hydrocarbons to electricity, there's a gaping hole, as far as we're concerned, in timely, affordable, and sizable grid connections. And our power parks really are a really major part of that solution.
Yeah. And there's a really fascinating part of this, which is in a power system, everyone knows that networks and locations are really important in terms of how much energy you can flow down a certain line, where certain transformers are to connect. That is a huge part of how power networks are put together. You're also then thinking about other networks in terms of haulage networks or transportation networks. And so I suppose you are, in terms of how you're planning this, you're almost sort of crossing over these two networks to try and find availability on the power side, but also pinch points on the transportation side as well.
Absolutely. And so the layers have different kind of attributes. So we are grid-led generally. Like, there's no point turning up and building a power park when the grid's not going to get there till 2030. Or something. So we're grid led, but equally we have this overlay of kind of golden transport routes. Again, there's no point building something in the middle of nowhere where there's no traffic. So we overlay that. We also overlay planning. So we have a huge amount of sites that go into the top of our kind of filter, our funnel, and then we have a really hard look at what's the possibility of getting power, what's the potential of getting planning, and then we work with our land agents to make sure we're getting the right sites. And obviously the new rules that have come in over the course of connections reform, where we need letters of authority, they're all things you should be doing anyway, and from our point of view. So it works really well. But yeah, there's a lot to look at.
And we've covered a little bit of where, and we've covered a little bit of who, but maybe we haven't covered the when. So is this all pointed towards 2038, or how quickly might this be able to deliver sites equipment on the ground?
So we think this needs to be timely. And so what we're not trying to do is build it and they will come. So we think anything from 2030 onwards is a really good date for us. I think before that, when it's not realistic to get the size of sites we're talking about through planning, doing the surveys correctly. So we're really looking at 2030 onwards. We're obviously constrained by connections reform, but actually not being constrained with load, not being constrained at all by CP 2030, and a really good need case for bringing these whole new energy vectors into the electricity system. We think there's a really good argument, and we're being quite vocal about the need for directly connected demand to really get to the front of the queue.
I mean, we're seeing negative prices in the middle of working weeks, so the system is frankly desperate for demand. Mm. And so this is a huge need, but also need for the system, but also an opportunity for people, right place, right time. But you talked a little bit about what you're installing, but perhaps we could put it in the context of some megawatt numbers, just so people get the idea of the size of one of these parks. Are we talking sort of 1 megawatt, or are we talking a gigawatt?
It's definitely towards a gigawatt. So at the moment, our applications are in the region of 400 to 950 megawatts on each site. Ultimately, we want a network of around 15 to 20 sites across the UK. They won't all be 1 gigawatt. But depending on where they are in the country, how many different vectors we think are viable in that area, and there's a big data center question on top of that. So where we think there's far more potential, the sites tend to be bigger. There is also a constraint on land in some cases, where there's a certain energy density you've got to hit from a land point of view.
I'm really interested in that when side, because that size between 450 megawatts and 900 plus megawatts is a very large project, effectively, is a simple way of describing it. But you can't build that and then only have a couple of HDVs coming through
yep.
per week, for example. That just won't work. So how do you manage to time it and locate it or contract it with the right group so that once it is built, you're getting that volume coming through from day one?
So I think the benefit of what we're doing is, because there's multiple different vectors that will land at different times, I don't know yet whether a data center is going to be in the area and we can contract with them, or whether EHDVs are going to have a massive uptake because we're on this kind of amazing route between, I don't know, Tilbury and Liverpool. So we will contract with enough volume to get past an investment committee, as long as there's also other conversations happening at the same time. So anyone that's been through funding knows you can't get away with building it and they will come. So there will be an anchor tenant. And we may also build our own electric HGV parks as well.
Okay. And so just when you're talking about vectors, you I think mean sort of EHGV, data centers, potentially some battery assets. Is that a kind of a good description of three of the options? Are there more options that you'd consider for those sites?
Yeah, we're having some really interesting conversations because cross-channel ferries are now talking about being 30 megawatts per ferry, and they might need to charge two or three of them at the same time. That's a 100 megawatt plus connection once you've reinforced the kind of the whole ferry port as well to accommodate that. Those things don't come out of nowhere. So yes, there is, data centers are a hot topic. Whether they form a core part of our proposition, we don't know yet. We hope so. But yes, there's also e-fuels. They've kind of had a bit of a rough journey over the last couple of years. But ultimately, if sustainable aviation fuel is going to happen, we want to be there in the right place to provide them power.
Okay. And then there's this I think, a really funky thing in the GB power sector and also in other power sectors, that you have really good network connection to certain power stations on the coast, because that's where the power stations are for the cooling water. And so you have very good grid connection to those points. But the port that might be slightly adjacent to it might not have the same quality of kind of grid getting to it. Yeah. So again, is that another part of how you overlay kind of the network of transportation with the network of power to try and find those hotspots where you think it's the right place to locate?
Yeah, a little bit. So we're not afraid of laying some cable ourselves and having some local network. So we've done this previously under another guise. Really proud of that previous project we built with EDF, powering multiple EV off-takers from the same connection our battery came from. So we're not afraid of that. They don't need to be absolutely on the same campus, as it were, in our power park. But if the port is 10 kilometers away, we shouldn't be afraid of that. If the connection's material enough, that can be absorbed.
Okay, super interesting. Maybe just for a few of the commercial heads, let's ask the question, how does this all make money?
So we make money not dissimilar to an IDNO or a distribution network, where we will take care of the large transmission connection, but backed off from that, we'll have customers that will come to us and pay a connections fee. They'll pay an access fee, kind of an annual annual fixed fee, and then a volumetric fee based on energy. We want to make it look and feel like any other connection, just hopefully turning up at the size and time they want.
Okay, there's a lot of a lot of facets to this, isn't there, to kind of pull it all together into like that successful.
Oh, it's been in my head for years.
Okay.
Okay, it's slowly coming to fruition.
And maybe on that theme, has this been done before? Is there a blueprint out there that you could look at and kind of copy? Or is this a new way of thinking about this?
I think it's genuinely new, but we're not breaking we're not the bleeding edge of anything. And I'm really deliberate never to be the bleeding edge of anything, because it's really difficult to get scale investment. And I don't want reg changes. That's kind of my golden rules for any company I've been involved in. But what we are doing is bringing together some of the things we did at Pivot Power and latterly EDF, where we took a single asset but used that connection for multiple things. And it was phenomenal. That was a cable we ran through a difficult part of Oxford. Oxford's hugely struggles with air quality. And we built the most powerful charging station in Europe at the time with amazing Tesla bays, amazing Fastnet bays, etc. So that part of kind of a private wire network has been done before. But private wire networks aren't new. I mean, if you look at most massive load centers in the history of the UK networks, there was often a power station sitting behind it, slightly different configuration, but nothing new under the sun. So we're just bringing some of these together in a package that's fit for the next stage of the energy transition.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of then things that this would offer back to the grid, so we've talked a lot about HDVs, data centers, things that you're sort of you will have on site and you will serve on site. Like with other sites that have a lot of money being spent on power electronics, is there something that you're looking to offer back to the grid in terms of something that will be valuable for the grid?
So at the moment, our vanilla proposition is load only. So we let customers will still pick their own supplier. They can probably do play some tunes on their own supply contracts as well if they want. But ultimately, we will have some very large connections straight onto the, ultimately onto 400 kV network. So if NESO and if the government think it's appropriate, then yes, we're all for plugging in long duration storage or some sort of inertial support device. I can't think of anything better than to use these complex but large scale connections to really be an all-encompassing solution and really contribute.
And with where kind of connections reform is going, I think we will see a lot of planning permission is already granted for a lot of battery projects of kind of the vanilla kind of that 2 to 4 to maybe just slightly over 4 hour duration. So it might be that outside of connections reform, it's those sort of more strategic type things like longer durations or inertia type provision that might be the things that get accelerated and can be added onto sites outside of the current process of connection reform.
We hope so. We're certainly whispering in as many ears as we can to make sure they know that's what we can offer. And we think this country's been very good at kind of sweating assets. This is a different way of optimizing instead of just letting things go old and using them as long as possible. This is really using high quality new connections and really make the most of them.
Okay. And if I'm on the network operator side, so transmission or distribution, am I looking at this proposal? Am I saying, oh God, I'm really not sure what's happening there. It's kind of multifaceted. There's multiple vectors. How am I supposed to think about this? This is very difficult for me to compute. Or are they sort of welcoming it with open arms in terms of just things like the load that it will bring onto the system?
I won't speak for them because I can't. I think, and I really hope what we've submitted for our technical declarations within our applications are, I think they're very sophisticated. I think we've tried to preempt some of the questions they had. They got processed quickly, but there's a lot more that went into our applications than a standard kind of one technology type application. There's multiple technical declarations.
Okay, it's a fascinating space. Let's move from the technical to the commercial and a little bit on Reload. So in terms of fundraising, planning, what's next for you?
So we've got the most amazing set of angels that have supported us. Some of them have been on the journey with us through Pivot. And so I think hopefully they like us and trust us. And like I say, there's six of us that have come from the old Pivot team. So they've been amazing. They continue to support us. At the moment, we've just gone out to the market for our next funding round. And we're looking at the moment to close funding to get us through to probably 2028, such that we got first projects spade ready to have the next round of investment kind of on a project by project basis. So it's a big raise for a small company, but there's a lot to do and we want to grow the team a little bit.
Okay,
we're pretty lean and we're very happy with that.
Okay, and I'm just going to just date stamp that. So we're 5th of June today, so that people can have context on kind of when this was recorded.
Okay.
And I think perhaps one silly question for me is that, is that funding to support Reload the company and then each of these individual projects will then get sort of project financed and supported that way? Because it feels like a huge amount of infrastructure, land, connection that you're going to have to be buying. I imagine that will go through a sort of project finance type structure.
It depends who comes in this round. So we're talking to everyone you would expect, kind of the big infrastructure players, some of the slightly smaller infrastructure teams that have more of a front-end mandate. And it depends on the size of their balance sheet as to whether they're hoping to follow through and finance first projects or whether actually they'll be part of the team that support us funding those individual projects. But you're right, they're big sites, they're tens of millions of pounds to build. So we've got to get it right. But equally, there's money out there that needs to be deployed in quality projects, and that's what we're here for.
I suppose one of the things we always hear about within the energy space is the kind of the ability of getting people on to these projects who are suitably qualified and can actually deliver these high quality electrical networks as needed. That requires a high number of engineers, electrically qualified groups to do that work, often through EPCs or sort of subcontraction.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? Because on one hand, I can see this really positive story that a huge amount of jobs will be required in order to deliver one of these parks, which is a great news story. But the other side for you, there must be so much work going on within the power system over the next few years. Do you feel confident that you're going to be able to kind of call in the right groups at the right times to be able to deliver these projects?
So I think it's a team effort. And what we found when we worked with particularly National Grid on previous battery projects, it is once you get past kind of the application process and you get awarded a connection date and sign a bilateral contract, etc. Once you get into the thick of it and you get to know the commissioning engineers, it's more of a team effort. So I'm confident of that and confident of recreating what we've done before. We have some fantastic relationships. I think I do generally worry about the UK space and how many TP141 commissioning engineers there are and how many TP144 substation design qualified engineers there are. If I had my time again, I'd have set up a whole company that trained these people from the start and contract them out at huge, huge fees. But at the moment, no, we need to make sure we're getting the right people at the right time. It's always going to be a challenge because there's so many people fighting for a finite amount of resource.
I totally agree. We hear this conversation a lot. Maybe just for listeners, of the pool of those people in GB, do you think we have sort of, are we talking about 50 people who are kind of qualified to that standard? Is it more like 500 or is it more like 5,000? How big is the pool of these kind of, on these pinch points of sort of project design, how many people in the UK can actually do this work?
I think first of all, I'd say our networks are amazing places to learn and all the best engineers have come through National Grid or Scottish Power or SSE or any of the distribution networks. And I think it's the network companies that actually struggle to keep hold of them because they can earn so much more money in the offshore wind industry, et cetera. I think in terms of the number of them, it's probably in that range you said, between 50 and 500 in any particular discipline. We've always struggled to get hold of TP141 engineers because they are, you need one on the oppo side, you need one on the network side and one on your side. And they genuinely, it's pretty old school. They sit there and they follow a minute-by-minute schedule. And if things go wrong, that's when they earn their money. And things do go out of sequence and not behave as you wanted. I think we are concerned about it. It's on our risk register. There's no two ways about it. But I think good quality companies with good quality kind of that will have good outcomes are the people that start planning ahead for that as quickly as possible, have done it before. The whole reason we support connections reform is there's some really quality outfits in the UK that can build things. And there's some that are there just to flip it and probably run. So we very much pitch ourselves on the quality end. And part of our job is to make sure we've got those resources available to us or at least on call when we need them.
Okay. And maybe this is not going to sort of come through in time for the plans that you have to execute. But if you're listening to this and you're interested in electrical engineering, how do you get into one of those spaces and go on to take on one of those roles?
So I would do your maths. Like it's absolutely key. Be really confident with that. But also get out there and talk to these companies. They're really, really good actually at talking to kind of younger potential engineers. I think there's probably not enough apprenticeships, I'll be honest with you, out there. And I think a reconsolidation of effort on that would be really helpful. I mean, just to give you the context, the in very round numbers, the transmission network is currently trundling along about £1 billion a year of investment. They need to be at £6 or £7 billion a year by 2028, 2029. So the scale of what's about to happen in front of us is it's an uncommon moment in my career. Yeah. That there's going to be such change, and whilst we want to capitalize and be a supporting part of that, I think there's probably an education side that needs to come along that journey, and now's the time to do it.
It is that there is this almost unique thing that's happening within the power sector
Ways about it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And maybe groups like GB Energy, kind of, if there is sort of a head scratching of where to put money, things like apprenticeships being supported to bring through technically qualified people feels like a sort of 10x way of being able to spend some of that war chest on upgrading power systems.
Absolutely. I mean, if we want growth in the UK, you want to bring in quality jobs and quality people will carve out quality careers for themselves, and the electricity industry is one of the highest growth areas there is for that. So yeah, we'd support that. We'd take that on, and I'd love to be part of it.
Okay, superb. Well, I'm gonna move us on to our final two questions that I'm hoping to cover today. So the first one is there anything that you'd like to plug?
I think anyone that's got a uncertain future that isn't, how can I put it? Anyone who isn't electricity industry knowledgeable at the moment, that knows they're going to have to switch into the power industry and buy a lot of electricity or connect large connections that don't have connections at the moment. We're all ears and happy to talk to people. Once we really know when we're locking connection dates, we're making huge strides within certain industries. We've had some amazing responses from people like Hauliers who are very happy to work with people that they can build some trust with. So anyone that wants to come and talk to us, we're here and we're ready for those conversations. There's a lot of people out there, hopefully, that we've already spoken to.
And I suppose from the Hauliers side, is there, obviously there's an attraction of working with groups like yourself and in terms of the electrification of that process. Is there also, within your business case, is there also like almost a push factor as well to move them away from being where they've been for donkey's years, which is running sort of diesel trucks?
There's a lot of European legislation that is doing the pushing. By 2030, I think it is, but certainly as you get towards 2040, if the fleet is not 100%, or if the new fleet of sales is not 100% electric by 2040, the fines are phenomenal. Mm-hmm. For manufacturers. So I think the main drive has been from the manufacturers, and they're doing some really innovative things now, because the biggest headache is residual values of trucks. They know what a diesel truck is worth at 5 years. They have no idea what a battery powered truck is worth at 5 years. So we were with a manufacturer the other day who was starting to look at underwriting that. So they know what the chassis is worth. They know what the cab's worth. And if someone can underwrite what the battery's worth, there's a whole industry ready to take them up once they're 5 years old, for example. So there's starting to be innovative things happening like that. But once it comes to purchasing power and getting grid connections, there's a bit of a gap that we're very happy to support people through and fill.
I think there's a lot of analogies between what's happening in the haulage industry to what's happened in the battery industry, in that as you get volume coming through in the battery side, you all of a sudden get this data on how do individual cells perform, how are inverters working alongside batteries. And it just means you can start to get these additional impacts in terms of longer life or better swapping out of components or avoiding issues in certain ways by being able to track certain data points. And I think that exact thing you've described, which is, okay, how does a electric powered truck, how does that mature over time? And what can we do to kind of extend the life of certain parts of it or potentially swap out certain parts of it?
Yeah.
That just feels like we're right at the beginning of that journey.
We are to a certain degree, but having built some of the earliest very large batteries in the UK and looked at how batteries perform, there is actually a wealth of data there that probably isn't being tapped into enough. I mean, you guys at Modo have some of the biggest data sets there must be on batteries and how they're performing, but actually getting to the owners who are looking at the real proper state of health of their batteries, the batteries are pretty good. So we have that wealth of data. So actually, I think we can quickly get things like Hauliers there. I think the biggest problem is probably availability of old-fashioned things like transformers, mm-hmm. switchgear, cable even. We're looking at lead times of 3 years on a 240 MVA transformer.
And a little plug here, if anyone wants to come on to talk about the process of actually manufacturing and testing transformers, we'd love to have that episode join us, because it's a fascinating part of the energy industry, and is, I think, listeners will really enjoy hearing about how those particular assets are made. Just to move us on to the final question, so a contrarian view, is there a view that you hold that the majority of the market doesn't agree with?
I think we are going to move quickly, very quickly, into electrification of transport. I think we're probably got a tipping point in not many years' time. I think once we can get power contracts at kind of 20 pence, 24 pence, and we can get hauliers kind of hooked into that, I think things are going to accelerate way quicker than even Fez suggests. And Fez is always... Fez always underestimates things, and that's fine. We know that, and I think haulage and particularly large EHGVs are going to accelerate way quicker than anyone can hope for. And the gap we're trying to fill is the chicken and egg, because what you've seen with domestic EVs, there's not enough infrastructure, causes expensive range anxiety. Mm. We want to just get rid of that. That doesn't exist in trucks, but the infrastructure will be the problem. So I think the uptake and the business case is going to be there far quicker than anyone realizes, and we're going to be there to fill it.
That's super interesting. So you're almost kind of calling out that an EV decision for whoever is almost a subjective decision, and there's an element of maths that doesn't feed into that, whereas actually for fleets, it's much more an objective decision to, okay, from a business perspective, should we actually be doing this? And as a result, you could get whole fleets shifting quite quickly.
If the infrastructure's there and the contracts are there for the cost of electricity, I think it happens quick. And I think the other factor that drives that is once you realize how few moving parts there are, these trucks will blow your mind at how they can drive up a hill without worrying about losing all their speed. I think they're amazing. I'm doing my HGV license just so I can start driving them myself and walking the walk.
Superb. What a fantastic place to end this episode on. Mikey, you've been a fabulous guest. We wish you the best of luck with Reload. And as you get those assets onto the ground and running, we'd love to have you back on to talk through how it's going.
No problem at all. Can't wait.